Welcome to Earl Times Podcast. Today we're going to talk about how to value houses that are already occupied with tenants. It's a little different than what you're used to, but you're still going to use a lot of the same online tools to be able to figure out how to value it. So let's start with something that I harp on. It's not what every investor uses, but it's actually the correct way. There is everybody that values houses, tries to sell them, uses the cap rate. That's actually not correct. I understand that every investor throws it out there and says you've got a cap rate of 15, 20, 25. That's not the correct terminology. That's not the correct formula. Anything that is going to use a cap rate has at least five units. So you need at least a five unit apartment, mobile home, you name it, to be able to use a cap rate. Everything that is one to four units uses what's called as a gross rent multiplier. So what you're stating as a cap rate is actually the return on the investment, the ROI. Typically, it's the gross because you haven't subtracted any type of expenses or reserves, anything like that. You haven't subtracted the capex off of the ROI. So it's usually the gross. In order to actually use a cap rate, an ROI in the cap rate is actually net. So you've subtracted all of your capex, your expenses, carrying cost, reserves, vacancy rates, you've done all of those. So one of the reasons that you don't actually use a cap rate with anything under four units is because it swings so high with the vacancy rate, with the occupancy rate. So just take a house, for example. You either have 100% occupancy or you have a 0% occupancy. So to be able to formulate that inside of a cap rate, it would destroy your formula. If you have, you know, a duplex, same thing. You're either at 100, 50, or zero. So you have too big of swings to be able to validate that inside the cap rate formula. I understand everybody does it. It's an accepted terminology in real estate. It's not right, though. So continue to do what everybody else in the business is doing, but understand what you're actually stating, because one thing about real estate is you make representations, you don't ever want anything to come back on you. So that's actually the appraiser in me talking more than the investor, because everybody in this business calls it a cap rate when it's not. So if you call it a cap rate, nobody's going to say anything to you. I would just prefer you know what you're actually stating versus what everyone in the business is stating, even though everyone in the business is actually factually incorrect. So when we look at income producing properties, what is important to do is the same thing that I mentioned in the how to get a more accurate ARV episode, is you need to go and find that old appraisal form, the 1004, and make a spreadsheet out of it. Just do a template, and then you can sit there and go through your comps, or you can go through your own house if you want to. If you don't want to put comps on it for this one, that's fine. You need to do that for the sales comparison part, but the income approach, it's not as important. So what you need to realize is the sales prices with these income producing properties don't matter. The Zillow values, what things are selling for on Zillow, completely irrelevant. Doesn't matter, throw it out, forget about it, don't use it. What does matter is the income. Now, you're going to have a standard in your area to where people want to buy at, you know, a 1% value based on the rent. They're going to buy at a 20%, 15%. Whatever is the standard for your area, you need to figure that out. That's what you're going to be able to sell these properties for. So it goes with that same part of the sales comparison side of it, but you're valuing the rent now. You're not valuing a sales price. So you have to kind of change the way you're going to think about it, but you're still using the same basic principles to get to that value. So how you start it, you've got something that's super simple. You can go to say Zillow and you can look what things are renting for on Zillow. You do the exact same thing that you would do when you're looking for something that's sold or what's for sale, because you're looking at your competition. So what's for sale or for rent is going to wind up being your competition. So in order to make things move, they always say everything comes down to price. Same thing for rent. So you're going to actually comp rents now versus sales prices. When you go and you look, you may find one that's been on Zillow that's been listed for 150 days. Well, what that tells me is two different things. Either they've got it priced too high, or the market doesn't have the demand to meet that listing, which it always comes back again to price. So if you've got a house that's been on Zillow for 150 days that's rented for 1,000, but then you're seeing the same thing, a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, renting for 850, and you don't see anything in those pictures that would validate the extra $150, it's not going to rent. You're going to get a tenant that goes in there that might have the money, probably going to be a desperation rent by the investor, because they're just trying to get a certain rent amount instead of following the market conditions. So if your cluster, let's say, is around $850, then you're going to throw out that $1,000 rental. And you may have another one that's sitting over that says, hey, I'll go rent this one for $700. You do the same thing with this. You throw the slumlord and the greedy investor out. So you're looking for the pattern, for the cluster. What, to be a pattern, you have to have more than two. That's why you have three comps on every appraisal, including on a income appraisal. You're going to have rent comps on an appraisal when you're appraising a property that's already occupied. So if you've got a couple of rentals that are in the 850 range, one might be 825, one might be 875, another might be 850, that's fine. So you're looking at things in a way of that same process that we did with the sales comparison ARV. You're going up and down that form, and I'm gonna show you how to make this super simple for you. What you do with these rental properties is you use what's called as a gross rent multiplier. Now you have two different ways of doing this formula. One is on an annualized basis. One is on a monthly basis. So if you go, and I'm going to do it just for easy math, when I give you a value, I'm going to call it monthly. But in order to do the annualized, and that's what a lot of your institutional investors are going to use instead of the monthly. I don't know why. It's more complicated, but it is what it is. So to do the annualized, excuse me, I'm trying to cough this morning. To do the annualized, you have the rent, you multiply it times 12, okay? Once you have the rent, then you know, okay, if I've got $1,000 a month rent and I multiply it times 12, now I have $12,000 annual income on that property. But in order to get the gross rent multiplier, I'm going to take you back to that spreadsheet with the old appraisal form, the 1004. What you need to do on that is condition, appeal, bedroom, bathroom, square footage, those design, site, all those different things. You need to use the exact same thing that we all used to get graded on when we were in school. So if your site, and you always have to bring it to area, You're not saying, oh, this is a great house, but it's in a terrible area. You're not saying this is a terrible house in a great area. You're not doing that. You're looking at the area in general. So what you should do is either look at like a middle school or a high school area. I mean, if you wanted to, you could, but if you've got a lot of rentals, it's easier to do that. A lot of times when you're in the, like a MSA in a major city, you can do an elementary school area and you'll have plenty of comps to choose from. Most times, you know, you're going to need that distance for a middle school or a high school. So if, like, say your condition for the area is a B, use an 80. Put an 80 next to the condition. Let's say that the appeal of it, it's a nice house for the area. Use that as a, say, 85 for the area. If it's a B for the area, use it. If it doesn't quite meet the A standard, that's when you use 85. You always use 5 increments. Don't ever go in and go, this is an 82. No one's that good. So if you have a true B, use an 80. If you have something that is a B, but it could be an A, but it's not, use an 85. So when you go down, you've got your year built, your condition, your site, appeal, bedrooms, bathrooms, square footage, you've got all of that. Then you're going to take that same way that I told you, you had an adjusted value at the bottom of the spreadsheet. Now you're going to have the average of all of them. So you may have 580s, 585s, 290s, whatnot. So for argument's sake, we're just going to say this is an 85. So when you're looking at it, you've got $1,000 rent. Monthly is going to be super simple. It's 1,000 times 85 gives you your income value of $85,000. When you go through on an annualized basis, you've got your 1,000 times 12 months, because that's going to give you your yearly income. Then you take that 85 and you divide it by 12, and that's going to give you, quote unquote, your monthly gross rent multiplier. It's going to wind up being the exact same number. It's just easier to do it on a monthly basis, because really all you've got to do is go, hey, this house is almost an A, but it's still a B, so it's an 85. 1,000 times 85 is $85,000 income value. Super simple, not hard at all. When you're showing these, when you're trying to get them sold, you present them to the investor with the income value. You're not sending over, hey, this Zillow comp is $85,000 and this Zillow comp is $110,000 and this Zillow comp is $50,000. That's not what you're doing. You're gonna hurt yourself, because the only thing that matters to an investor is the income. If an investor is buying a house to rent, then they need to understand what the income value is. Now, I know if they're going to get a loan, most of your banks are going to want that sales comparison. They're going to want that Zillow and that realtor value, and that's fine. Because your income, if you're doing the highest and best use, your income value and your sales value should be close to each other. So if you've got an $85,000 income value, you should have $80,000, $85,000, $90,000 sales value. If everything is fixed in good condition, it should be close together. If they're doing something that's not in the highest and best use, let's say they're going to Beverly Hills to try to rent something out, the income is never going to meet the sales. You've got $10 million houses over, you know, Beverly Hills, and you're going to rent them for what? $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a month? That's not going to give you anywhere near the same or similar values So renting a house in Beverly Hills is not the highest and best use. That's why you see properties in New York that have, the city anyway, that have rent control. Is because the values are so out of hand because it's so dense that if somebody came in and, you know, they've got to spend $50 million to buy this apartment building, but then they can only get $1,500 out of each unit's rent because of rent control, that makes those cap rates get real low. When in essence, since the highest and best use is actually to rent those in the city of New York, if you had to pay $50 million for a 10-unit building, but you can only get $1,500, most people are not going to do it. But it's a very stable environment because of the rent control. So instead of, you know, seeing a good cash-on-cash return in 15, 20 years, it's going to take them 50 years. New York is a legitimate long-term play. Very few things in New York are short-term plays. That's why anytime you see properties come up in New York, most times, you know, they sell fairly quick. But it's an outrageous amount of cost to actually invest in something in New York with taxes and all of the things, the codes that you've got to. If you're in New York, I feel sorry for how you have to invest up there, but you know, that's the market of New York. It makes investors money, but at the same time, if you're going to rent something, go to an investor friendly area to where there's not a lot of restrictions on you, that you can pretty well do what you want to do, that your expenses are not, they're going to be affordable and not necessarily outrageous, I guess. But if you're looking at a property that, like I said, has $1,000 rent in there, but you know, everything is pretty well fixed, it's in good condition, good street for the area, things like that, and you can put a solid B on it, then now you've got an $85,000 value out of it, because again, 1,000 times 85 is 85,000. If you're, let me go back over this again, the annualized portion of it is 1,000 times 12. Your gross rent multiplier that you worked out on that spreadsheet is 85 divided by 12. So you may wind up having 12,000 times 6.75. I mean, I don't know that that's the annualized off the top of my head, but that might be what it is. So you're going to come to the same value either way. When you're looking at rentals, especially houses, the most important thing typically is the bedrooms. Bathrooms are important, but the bedrooms are usually what drives the rent, the amount of it. It's super simple. It follows the same thing as a sales comparison. A two-bedroom typically sells for less than a three-bedroom if all things are equal. So if you look at what a two-bedroom rents for versus what a three-bedroom rents for, it's going to be the same. Now, two bedrooms are hard in sales and income, if it's a house anyway, because it's a starter. So a lot of times as family grows and things like that, they turn over more often. But you'll always rent a two bedroom for more per foot than you'll rent a three bedroom or a two bedroom. And the reason that is because it's the same principle where you have a lot is worth $50,000 and a price per acre is, you're sitting down and you've got a $20,000 per acre, but you've only got a 30,000 square foot lot that's 50,000. So the smaller the property is always more per foot than anything else. So don't worry about what things are necessarily selling for around there, around where your property is. You have to figure out what everybody calls a cap, but is really a return. What's the acceptable return for, you know, a certain market? So if it's a 20% return, then that means that the equity for the investor is already built in. If it's a 15% return, That means that the equity is getting skinnier, but it is built in. If you're good at a 1% rule, you don't really have a lot of equity because you're just buying to buy. There are areas that have this, and you know, good for them, but it's going to take them a long time to make money off of it. The easiest way to actually make long-term money with rentals is going to be I'm going to say something that is probably going to, a lot of people are going to disagree with it. And when they disagree with it, that's fine. That's their way. But if you want to make money long-term in real estate with rentals, you do it with Section 8. Section 8 is economy proof. I don't have a single rental that is not Section 8. I don't own a single one that is not Section 8. One reason is I was the appraiser that the housing authority awarded the contract 2 years ago with their ownership program. So I learned the system a lot better than most people were able to. I liked it, and that's, you know, what I decided to do. But the main reason is, it's economy proof. And what I mean by economy proof is, you look at what's going on right now in the world. People are talking about rent strikes, landlords not being able to pay their mortgage payments, things like that. I have not a single one of my tenants has missed rent or said a word about it during every bit of this. So while other landlords are out there wondering if their tenants are going to hold their jobs, keep their jobs, be able to make payments, or if they're going to have trouble out of their tenants, can they evict them? Can they go through all this hassle? My rentals are operating 100% as normal, regardless of circumstances. It is economy proof. So people say that it's a war zone, it's this and that. Some markets that may be true, but you need to understand something. The housing authority is a federal program. Someone could be approved for a voucher for rent assistance in New York City and decide that they wanted to move to Los Angeles. The only thing that they have to do is get Los Angeles to agree to pick up their voucher and they can move. It is completely transferable nationwide. So if you're approved in New York City, but you want to live in one of the suburbs of New York instead of the city, that's fine. It still falls in their district, so they're still going to pay it. So if you have somebody that's approved, and it doesn't mean if you get into better schools, better areas, those kind of things, that Section 8 is not a viable option. Every single house, every single property in the United States of America that is residential is Section 8 approved, if you put it to the code of what they require. And Section 8 requires FHA. So if you can pass an FHA inspection, you can rent that property Section 8. Doesn't matter where it's at, anywhere in the United States. So you don't have to be in, quote unquote, a war zone to be able to rent Section 8 and protect your investment. You can go to the good schools, good neighborhoods, good areas. You can do that. Now, are your neighbors going to appreciate the fact that you did that? Probably not. But your livelihood is what you're looking out for. So as long as that tenant's not causing problems, doesn't matter. Everybody deserves the ability to be empowered, have a chance at something. So if you have a property and you're going to get $1,000 rent out of it one way or the other, every single time I would say go Section 8 instead of going with somebody with a job. Because if a coronavirus, a recession, anything like a foreclosure crisis shows up again, you're still going to get your rent when everybody else is going to be holding the bag and getting in trouble. So don't ever think that just because you're in a certain area that you cannot rent that to someone on Section 8. Anywhere in the United States, any residential property can be approved for Section 8. It does not matter. So that's why I do it, because I protect myself. I don't have to worry about economic conditions. that go on, things that are outside of my control, I'm protecting myself. So if, you know, the housing authority is going to pay you the same thing as what market rent is, protect yourself. Let someone that's on Section 8 rent it. Nine times out of 10, they're not going to call you near as often as someone not on it. As long as you take care of that property and you treat that person like an actual person of equal value to you. Now, if you treat them like they're lesser, you could potentially have some problems. But I think that is something that we all experience in life in general. You treat people as though you want to be treated, and everything works out. If you have any questions on how to value the income producing properties, feel free to leave a comment. Visit us at earltoms.com. You'll be able to find some more information that'll help you grow your business there. And just for a reiteration, the formula to determine income annualized, rent times 12 times gross rent multiplier divided by 12, and that'll give you your income value annualized. So it's rent times 12 times gross rent multiplier divided by 12. You need to put rent times 12 in a bracket, gross rent multiplier divided by 12 in a bracket. When you get those two values is when you multiply them together. It's not a multiply as you go. To do it monthly, it's rent times the gross rent multiplier. So it's, example, 1,000 times 85. Super simple, not complicated. Everyone should be able to do it. Just go comp rent versus sales price. If you've got any questions or want to leave a comment, that's great. You can do that. But don't forget to go check out earltoms.com, and we should have some things over there that would help your business grow, and maybe some things you hadn't thought of, whether it be business tools, marketing, whatnot. We have some things over there. Hope everyone is staying safe with what's going on. Everyone's, you know, still understanding there is money to be made. People need our help right now. But with that, I'm gonna draw it to a close. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Hope you learned something. We will see you next time. Stay safe, everybody. Stay healthy.